the feeling is that with our arms we are touching the lotus feet of the Lord. And at that time the mind should meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord, and mind must visualize that we are offering obeisances to the Lord. And with our words we must glorify the Lord, saying some prayers to Krishna or Srila Prabhupada. And offering obeisances with eyes means when we close down our eyes little bit, half closed, that is called offering obeisances with eyes. And then there is Panchanga Pranam, or offering obeisances with five angas. Now that is when we kneel down and touch our head to the ground. That is called Panchanga Pranam. And what are the five angas? The five angas are our knees, our arms, our head, our mind, and our intelligence. So with these five, we offer obeisances. So that is called Panchanga Pranam. Now, one thing, of course, I'm sure everybody knows, but still I feel it is necessary to mention that the ladies do not offer Ashtanga Pranam. They offer Panchanga Pranam, kneeling down and touching the head, touching the ground with their head. And it says that Vishnu should be offered obeisances, keeping him on the left hand side, like we do that. When we offer obeisances, we offer obeisances to Vishnu on our left, and Shiva and Durga should be offered obeisances, keeping them on the right, and Guru should be offered obeisances in the front. In this temple, it's quite practical. Of course, our understanding is, like, it actually happened after Prabhupada left the planet. I asked one of Prabhupada's very close friend from his early days in India, Narayan Maharaj, who was actually Prabhupada's godbrother's disciple, Keshav Maharaj's disciple. And he was instructing us what to do, and because we all were very naive at that time. And so when I asked him, he said that we can offer obeisances to Prabhupada, keeping him on the left, with the understanding that Prabhupada is with Vishnu now, Prabhupada is with Krishna now. So with that understanding, we offer obeisances to Prabhupada, keeping him on the left, the way one does to Vishnu. So, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much.
So, today I'll continue with the Vaishnava etiquette class. So, today is the fourth lesson. The fourth lesson is seeing the deity, meditation and offering. Also, one thing is left out here, that is arati, that is also better included in there. So, seeing the deity, how we should see the deity, and the meditation and offering of the deity, meditation of the deities and offering to the deities. Actually, every devotee knows that the form of the Lord, the deity form of the Lord, is non-different from the Lord. Now, people sometimes come up with arguments that how come you say that this deity is Lord? Because I can see that this is stone or metal or wood and so on and so forth. So how can you say this material object to be the Supreme Absolute Personality of Godhead? The very common argument, the very common question to that argument is that if you consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is omnipotent and omnipresent, if the Lord is present everywhere, and if the Lord is all-powerful, then cannot the Lord become manifest in His deity? It is a very atheistic argument to say that the Lord is not present in the deity. Yes, the Lord is everywhere, especially the impersonal. The Lord is present everywhere. But they say, how do you worship the deity? So our argument is, if the Lord is present everywhere, then what is the harm in understanding that the Lord is also present in the deity? But the deeper understanding is that although Lord is present everywhere, but the Lord is very specially present in His deity. Lord's appearance as the deity is very, very special. Because the deity of the Lord did not become manifest through some material means. The Lord's form actually becomes, first it becomes manifest by His special mercy. Like you all know the story of Lord Jagannath, the appearance of Lord Jagannath. Lord Jagannath's form, the first way Lord appeared, it was just by the mercy of the Lord towards His very great devotee, King Indradumna, that the Lord appeared as Lord Jagannath. First He appeared as the Daru Brahma, the transcendental log that came floating by the ocean, and King Indradumna was instructed in a dream that the Lord has appeared in the form of Daru Brahma. And then they could see that this log was not an ordinary wooden piece. It was not just a log as such. Because the king could not lift it from the ocean. He used all his strength. He used his elephants. He had hundreds of elephants, or why hundreds? Thousands of elephants. And he had hundreds of thousands of very powerful soldiers, and jointly they tried to lift that transcendental wood, but they could not lift it from the ocean. And when the king was absolutely frustrated that it is impossible to lift the log from the ocean, then he was instructed in a dream by the Lord that his Brahmin Pujari, Vidyapati, and the king of the Savaras, the king of the hunters, Vishravasu, hold two ends of the log, then they will be able to take the log out of the water. And so immediately king approached the head priest, Vidyapati, and the king of the Savaras, and requested them to try to lift it from the water. And when they tried to lift it, then very easily the log was lifted from the water. And then the king wanted to carve the deity of the Lord from that wood, and he called all the carpenters and wood carvers, and all those famous carpenters and wood carvers came to carve the deity of the Lord, but they could not even touch their tools into the piece of log. As soon as they touched that wood with their tools, then immediately the tools were breaking into pieces. So they couldn't even make a scratch on that wood. So this way, it is obvious that this wood was not an ordinary piece of wood. It was a transcendental. It appeared as a mercy of the Lord. And then also, ultimately, the deities were carved by the Lord Himself. The Lord appeared in the form of a carver as Ananta Maharana. And there is a contradiction about that, like some scriptures say that this carver, Ananta Maharana, was actually Vishwakarma. And some scriptures, especially Skanda Puran, mention that this carver, Ananta Maharana, was the Lord Himself. So when there is some contradiction in the scriptures like that, then it has been explained by Sanatana Goswami that we must take it as kalpabhed. That in some kalpa, Vishwakarma came as the carver, and in some other kalpa, the Lord appeared as the carver. Because whatever is mentioned in the scriptures is truth and nothing but the truth. So, if there is any contradiction in scriptures like that, then the understanding is in different cults, because the Lord is appearing in His forms, in every culture. The way Krishna comes once in every culture, once in every day of Brahma, the same way Lord's different incarnations also appear in different cultures, and Lord's different pastimes also take place in different cultures. Now, in some culture, Vishwakarma came as Ananta Maharana, and in some kalpa, the Lord appeared as Ananta Maharana. And then all the forms of Lord Jagannath is actually an extension of that original form of Lord Jagannath. So that is why the form of the Lord is not an imagination or mental concoction. It is manifest, He is manifest as His special mercy to the Lord, special mercy to the conditioned living entities. Lord's mercy towards the conditioned living entities. So this is the understanding, and you have to understand that the form of Lord is non-different from the Lord. And it has been explained in the scripture that the deity is manifest in eight different ways, in eight different times, and there the deity may appear from stone, wood, metal, clay, painting, sand, mind, and jewel. Deity of the Lord may become manifest from stone, like here Gopinath ji has appeared from stone. Then wood. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra has appeared from wood. Then Gaur Nitai has appeared from metal. Then also deities can be made of clay. Like in Los Angeles and then later on in Detroit, we had our state where there were making the deities out of fiberglass. So the deity was made of fiberglass, and the deity of Kaliya Krishna, and the deity was installed in Fiji temple. Because the understanding is that Kaliya was chastised and banished by Krishna from the lake of Jamuna, Kaliya Raj, and then Kaliya went far away to Shamanak Island, and Prabhupada said that Shamanak Island is actually Fiji. So Kaliya is residing still in the region of Fiji. So Prabhupada established the deity of Kaliya Krishna in Fiji temple. And that deity was made of fiberglass. And Prabhupada told that that deity was actually, fiberglass is actually clay. He said it's clay, the clay deity. There are some devotees question. I think Jasodhanandan Maharaj raised the question that generally deities were never made of fiberglass before. Then Prabhupada said, no, fiberglass is clay, and clay deities are authorized. Then painting, like here we have also the painting of Vishnu Dev and painting of Panchatattva, the photographs. These photographs or paintings are also bona fide deities of the Lord. Then also deities are made of sand, or deities are drawn on the sand sometimes. Like they do that on, especially during the Jagga ceremony, fire sacrifice. The Jagga Vedi, on the altar, they draw the form of the Lord sometimes. So that is also bona fide. That is made of sand. The deities get manifested from the sand. And then deities also can appear from the mind. Mind also is a stuff, right? Mind also is one of the elements. And when a pure devotee sees the Lord in the mind, or meditates on the Lord in the mind, that is also the bona fide appearance of the Lord or the deity of the Lord. And the Lord also can appear in the form of a jewel. Like Lord's form sometimes are carved out of jewels. That is also bona fide. So these are eight different kinds of manifestations of the Lord. Now, regarding that also we have to understand one thing, that our vision or our perception has become material. We have become limited by our material senses. So what we can perceive only what we see with our material eyes. Now, with our material eyes we can simply see matter. But the Lord is transcendental. Lord is beyond matter. So that's why in order to become visible to our material eyes, the Lord manifests Himself through these different material, so-called material means. But the Lord Himself is always transcendental. Regarding that, there are some stories, like one story I remember. Once a sage was invited to a king's court, and the king was arguing with the saintly person about the transcendental form of the deity. He said, "I don't believe in deity." In Kali Yuga there are many atheistic kings like that, those who do not believe. So he said, "We don't believe, how can this stone, piece of stone or piece of wood can be considered as the absolute personality of Godhead?" So he said, "I don't believe in that." So that friendly person said, "Okay, who is that person on the wall? Whose painting is that on the wall?" And so he said, "That's my father's picture. He was the king. And that's his picture." So he said, "I want to see the picture closely. Can you bring it?" So here's the king instructed, "Okay, bring that picture down." And so picture was brought down close to the saintly person. And then he immediately spat on that king on the picture. And the king was very angry. He says, "You can't do that. This is my father's picture. It's a total disregard to his elevated position." And then he says that, "Why? Actually, I was thinking of kicking him on the face, actually." But anyway, since you're getting so agitated, so I would rather refrain from that. "But tell me, it's just a picture. Why are you getting so upset about it? It's just a picture. I mean, after all, your father is not there." Then this is how he pointed out that the personality is depicted by the picture. The same way the Lord is depicted through the deity. And since the Lord is omnipotent, His deity and His original form are non-different. Then the deities are of two kinds. Some deities are self-manifest and some deities are established. There are some deities that are self-manifest. There are many deities in India that are self-manifest, like Ranganathji's deity in Ranganatham in South India is is self-manifest. Then I was mentioning the other day that Radharaman Deity of Gopalbhatta Goswami was self-manifest. Gopalbhatta Goswami used to worship 12 Saligram Sila. And one morning he saw, when he came to wake the deity Sila, he saw that one of the Shilas has become Radharamanji. It's a Saligram Sila that became the deity. And there is a Nrisimha deity in Ahobalam that is also self-manifest. And there is a very peculiar characteristic of the deity, or not peculiar, I would say very transcendental characteristic of this deity in Ahobalam. Like whatever one offers, the Lord in Ahobalam, Nrisimha Dev, drinks only sugar-friendly water. He drinks that only, and he takes only half the offering, and he gives the half as his remnant to whoever makes the offering. So no matter how much one is offering, if it's a small quantity or a big quantity, as soon as half of it is offered, then Nrisimha Dev gurgles and makes a roaring sound. And so that is the indication that he has taken half and he doesn't want to take any more. Like if you offer 100 gallons, then he will take 50 gallons and make the sound. And if you want 100 grams, then he will take only 50 grams and leave the rest for the devotees. So also there was one Nrisimha Deity near Mayapur in Navadvip, Nrisimha Kshetra, that deity also is self-manifest. There are many self-manifest deities like that. The Balaji deity also is self-manifest. The Balaji deity of Tirupati. And there is also a very nice story about Balaji deity. When Balaji, at first Balaji's form are two arms. And when Shankaracharya was preaching very effectively, Shankaracharya actually preached all over India, and his influence became very, very prominent in India. And he got, or his people took over the charge of Tirupati temple, Balaji temple. And they were worshipping Balaji as Lord Shiva, as Shankara. So when Ramanujacharya came, he claimed that this is not Shankara, this is Krishna, this is Vishnu. So there was a big argument. So Shankarites, they would not accept, and Ramanujacharya tried to convince them through scriptures and other arguments. Then, and finally it was agreed, the Shankarites told Ramanujacharya that Vishnu is four arms, but this is actually two arms deity. So how can you claim that this is Vishnu? So since Ramanujacharya gave different arguments that this Balaji is actually Krishna, so that's why he appeared in two arms form. But he said, then finally it was agreed that by the next morning, if Balaji displays four arms, then it will be accepted that he is Vishnu, otherwise it will be understood that he is Shiva, Shankara. So they thought that they are actually atheistic, they don't believe in Lord's transcendental qualities. So they thought that how can stone deities display two more arms? So the next morning, when they opened the deity and they all went, they saw that Balaji manifested two more arms. His lower arm, not only his deity was self-manifest, his lower, two lower arms became manifest quite recently, about 1,000 years ago. Kamalacharya was not even 1,000 years, less than that. So this way, the Lord's deities can become manifest on by His divine mercy. Also, there are other examples, like we know the deity of Sakshi Gopal, who walked all the way from Vrindavan to Vidyanagar, something like it's about 2,500 kilometers. The deity walked. Also, Sanatan Goswami's deity, Madan Mohan, he used to play with his cowherd boys. So Madan Mohan would just leave the temple and he would become Krishna. Actually, Madan Mohan is not different from Krishna. And he would play with the cowherd boys. And Sanatan Goswami would tell him, come, Madan Mohan, it's time to have prasad. So he would come back to the temple. There are many wonderful pastimes like that. And there are other kind of deities are known as established deities. These established deities are apparently man-made, but then they were carved or they were made, and then by the Vedic rituals they are installed in the temple. So they are called established deities. Generally most of the deities are established deities. So then there are some quotes from the scriptures about deity worship. Okay, now the third point is that how one should see or how one should meditate the Lord. So this is the deity. So first of all, you have to understand that this deity is non-different from the Lord Himself. And the perception of the Lord should not be material. We must try to see the deity of the Lord with our transcendental vision, not with our material eyes. We must see with our transcendental or divine or spiritual vision. And that's why it has been instructed that first we must see the deity starting from his lotus feet. We must see his lotus feet, and then our vision should rise higher to his legs, to his thighs, to his abdomen, to his chest, to his arms, to his neck, then finally to his face and his forehead, etc. One should not directly look at the face of the deity. Now regarding this, we must remember that the Lord is manifest in the form of knowledge, or the knowledge of the Lord is in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we want to know Krishna, then we must try to know Him through Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam has been divided into 12 cantos. And the first two cantos signify Lord's legs. Then third and fourth canto signify Lord's thighs. Then the fifth canto signifies Lord's abdomen. The sixth canto, Lord's chest. Seventh and eighth canto signify his arms. Ninth canto, his neck. And tenth canto, his face. 11th canto, his forehead, and 12th canto is his head. So when you see the Lord, we must try to understand his position or who he is through these different cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then finally we must reach the 10th canto, gradually rising from 1 to 9th, and then to the 10th canto, which is the face of the Lord. When we see Krishna, that is how we must see him. And then if we want to see further, then if we want to see his forehead, that is the 11th canto, and if we want to see his head, then that is the 12th canto. So a devotee must see the Lord through Srimad Bhagavatam. We shouldn't just see him as he appears to our eyes. So we must see him as he is through our transcendental vision or our transcendental knowledge. Then, what happens when one worships the Lord? It is said that when one worships the deities of the Lord, then he delivers not only his entire family, but the entire world. By worshipping the deity of the Lord in the temple, we can actually deliver the entire material nature. And like a desire tree, the deity fulfills all desires. When we worship the Lord with love and devotion, worship the deity of the Lord in the temple, then he fulfills all our desires. So this is how we should meditate on the Lord and how we should observe the Lord or worship the Lord. And then there is how to make the offerings. That also has been elaborately explained, but I won't get into that. But I'll now jump into the arithic of the Lord. Now, what is the arithic and what is the benefit? It is said in the Harivaksha Vilas that arithic should be performed with loud singing and various instruments. When we sing the arith, when we offer the arithic to the Lord, there should be loud singing, congregational glorification of the Lord, and that singing should be accompanied by various musical instruments. Then, lamps that we offer to the Lord should have odd numbers of flames. 3, 5, 7, 9, etc. It shouldn't be even numbers. And so generally, the arithic is offered with 5 lamps or pancha pradeep. And when one performs the arithic of Keshava with many lamps, he resides in heaven for millions of kalpas. Skanda Puran says that when one offers arithic to the Lord with many lamps, then by performance of the arithic he becomes qualified to be elevated to the heavenly planets and reside there for millions of kalpas. Then Skanda Puran also says, when a person offers arithic with camphor lamps, he resides in the abode of Vishnu eternally. He becomes qualified to reside in the abode of Vishnu eternally. So the pujaris are very, very fortunate people. Just by worshipping the Lord and offering arithic to him, they are actually becoming, they are actually gathering heaps of pious activities. And ultimately, they'll go back to Vishnu Loka and reside there eternally. Then another shloka from Skanda Puran says, if arithic is performed with beautiful lamps, then lust, greed, anger, etc., the products of or the manifestation of the mode of ignorance can be conquered. If we offer arithic to the Lord, then we can, and even if we observe the arithic of the Lord, then the influence of the mode of material nature, mode of ignorance in the form of lust, greed, anger, etc., can be conquered. And when these are conquered, then one does not take birth again. When one becomes free from the influence of the mode of ignorance, lust, greed, anger, then he does not have to come back and take birth in this material nature. Even if the Lord is worshipped without mantras and proper activities, but still, if the arathik is performed, then everything becomes complete. We may offer worship to the Lord without mantra. Somebody may be ignorant, and he doesn't know what mantras to offer to the Lord. And he may not even know how to properly worship the Lord. But if he offers arathik to the Lord, then just by performing arathik, his worship becomes complete. Then it says, when one sees the lotus face of Sri Vishnu illuminated with the rays of lamps during the arathik, then his sin due to killing of millions of brahmanas and having illicit sex with millions of low-class women becomes eradicated. One becomes free from the grossest, most degraded sin. Therefore, everyone must observe arathik with great concern and worship the lamps. And it's also been mentioned that arathik should be observed standing up, and when the lamp is passed around, one must take the warmth of the lamp. And that's why we do that. So, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I have about 10 minutes to attend question and answers. Right, that's true. That's true. Did not include that. It says that when one dances in front of the deity during the arathik with his raised hands, then by due to that, with every step, the earth gets purified. And because of his raised hands, the heavenly planets, the residents of the heavenly planets, become blessed by the devotee's raised hands. The heaven becomes blessed because of the dancing, and the dancing with raised hands. Yeah, there are things, examples like that. Also, during the arathik, when you clap, then with the clap, the sins fly away, like birds fly away hearing the clap. The sins like birds fly away when we clap during the arathik. Today we'll discuss about the fifth lesson out of 20 lessons on Vaishnava etiquette. The fifth one is how to receive guests and Vaishnavas in the temple. It's a very significant topic. So, we must first of all understand that the temple is Krishna's house. The temple is the spiritual sky, Vaikuntha Loka. It's non-different from Vaikuntha. Prabhupada often used to say that the difference between material nature and the spiritual nature is that the material nature is the nature where we put ourselves in the center. Everybody in the material nature thinks that he is the center of everything. But the spiritual nature is the nature where Krishna is the center. So when we put Krishna in the center, then wherever it is, that place actually becomes the spiritual sky. Actually, the material nature is also a part of the spiritual sky. This material nature is actually a part of Krishna's nature, part of the spiritual sky, because everything is Krishna's. But unfortunately, or by Krishna's divine arrangement, A part of the spiritual sky has been covered by 8 layers. Those layers are the layers of 5 elements and the layers of mind and intelligence and finally the layer of Maya, the layer of the the layer of the subtle material energy. So this is how this part of the spiritual sky has been covered, and due to this covering, the absolute knowledge that pervades the whole spiritual sky cannot enter into this region. And that's why this place is in eternal darkness. Or this place, due to the coverings of Maya, this place is in eternal ignorance. So it is a part of the spiritual sky that has been covered. And an example or a comparison can be made with the kingdom of a king and the prison house. The prison house is also a part of the king's kingdom. It's not that the prison house is outside the kingdom of the king, but that the prison house has been separated from the rest of the kingdom of the king by a very high wall. And the prisoners, or the people, those who have been put into that area that is covered by a very high wall, cannot come out. And in that prison house, they are suffering for their criminal activities. So the same way, this material nature is the prison house of the Supreme King, Krishna. And because of this very high wall of the 8 layers of covering, we cannot get out of this prison house. And also because of this covering, the real knowledge, the absolute knowledge, Brahma Gyan, the knowledge of the absolute, cannot enter into this spiritual, into this region. And whoever is here, whoever has been hurled into this region by Krishna's divine arrangements, are in ignorance. And that ignorance is that they are not aware of Krishna and the spiritual nature. But at the same time, Krishna has made arrangements to educate these people. And that's why Krishna made various wonderful arrangements. He himself comes to educate people. And when he comes, he imparts the knowledge. And at the very beginning of creation, as a matter of fact, even before the creation began, Krishna gives the absolute knowledge in the form of the Vedas. Then Krishna sends his pure devotees or Vaishnavas from time to time. Not from time to time, always. Prabhupada says that there is never a time when a pure devotee is not existing on this earth planet. And when somebody becomes sincerely interested to go back to Godhead or get out of this material bondage, material suffering, then Krishna makes arrangements. Then another wonderful arrangement Krishna made is he is residing in everybody's heart in the form of Paramatma, as a super soul. And then Krishna sent some, Krishna made some very, very wonderful arrangements, like Tulasi Devi's appearance on this planet, Krishna's appearance in the form of Shaligram Srila, then Krishna's temples. So these are all the extensions of the spiritual sky. And when one comes in contact with these with a favorable attitude, then they gradually become qualified to go back to Godhead. Actually, although Krishna has imprisoned us by the arrangement of Maya in this material nature, but at the same time Krishna doesn't want that we suffer in the material nature. He wants us to go back to Godhead. He wants us to go back to Him. And He has made so many wonderful arrangements for that. And temples are the extensions of the Vaikuntha Loka. These temples are non-different from the spiritual sky. Because here, Krishna is the center. A true temple, a real temple, is never owned by anyone. Although sometimes some rich people build temples, especially in India, but they do not consider it to be Krishna's temple. But they think it is their temple. Like there is a very rich man in India called Birla, it's a family, called Birla family. They build temples, a lot of temples, and they built quite a few temples, and they are very gorgeously built. Very beautiful temples. Like in Calcutta they are building a temple, and the work is going on for the last 15 years. Still it is not complete. It's all marble and very intricately carved marbles. Of course the story behind it is that it's a way to get rid of the black money. And the Burmese always have some motivation, and they use Krishna as a matter of convenience. Instead of serving Krishna, they turn Krishna into their servant or a convenience. In the name of Krishna, deceive the government. In the name of Krishna, evade taxes and turn the black money into white. And so on and so forth. That's actually the reason is that the work is going on for so many years, because the longer it goes on, they can transfer their black money and convert it into white. So, and they call their temples, they don't call them Krishna temples, Radha Krishna temples or Lakshmi Narayan temples. Their temples are known as Birla temples. So that's also another epitome of false ego. These people actually, they have a little bit of piety, but the father Birla died a few years back, and it was very exemplary the way he died. He was in London, he went out for a morning walk, and then he had a heart attack right on the street, and he rolled onto the gutter by the side of the street, and he died there, just on the street, in the gutter. So much money, but at the time of death, I couldn't even get a drop of water. So that's what everybody wants at the time of death. The throat becomes purged, the throat becomes dry, and that's the time one feels very thirsty. And that's why it is a Vedic custom that at the time of death, the water is given, preferably Ganga water or Jamuna water, or the water from the lotus feet of the Lord, Charanamrita. But that man, because of his offenses, he was so sinful that he could not even get a drop of water in spite of all his billions of dollars. But a devotee knows that Krishna's temples are non-different from Vaikuntha. So that's why a devotee never claims any proprietorship over the temple of Krishna. He simply has a service attitude
All he wants is to serve Krishna. And yes, if some protection is needed, then they give the protection to the temple. But they don't think that this temple is theirs. On the other hand, they feel that this temple is actually meant for attracting everyone to Krishna, and they think that Krishna's devotees have the real right over this temple. So that's what would happen in India sometimes when the kings would build a big, big temple, but the king would hand it over to some saintly person or persons, brahmanas. And the king would supply all that they needed. The kings in India used to have gorgeous worship of temples before. And the tradition is still going on. Like it is for whenever the question of serving or doing something for the Lord arises, then the rich people of India still come forward and give big donations. Like in Calcutta, there are people, those who have pledged millions of dollars to build a temple in Calcutta. They pledged to us, ISKCON devotees, millions of dollars. So that tradition is still there in India, that understanding is there, that Krishna's temple is actually the property of Krishna, and the best persons to take care of that property, the best caretakers of this property, are the devotees of Krishna. And sometimes devotees also build temples for Krishna, but they would never demand anything, or they would never claim anything from the temple. Like the examples are, wonderful examples are given by Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and the other Goswamis of Vrindavan. They built temples in Vrindavan. Enormous temples, very, very opulent temples. But they never even lived in those temples. They lived under trees. Although they built temples, but they never thought that these temples were theirs. So that is the real mood of a devotee. They don't exploit Krishna. They simply want to serve Krishna. And more we make advancement, more advanced we become, the service attitude will become more and more intense. And we will demand less and less from Krishna. Like regarding that, there is a very nice example given by Sanatana Goswami. One day Rupa Goswami wanted to feed Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami came to Rupa Goswami's place near Radhakund, near Govardhan, and Rupa Goswami thought, it would be so nice if I could offer some sweet rice to Sanatana Goswami. But he used to simply maintain himself by begging. He would go from door to door and beg. So it was actually very difficult for him to prepare sweet rice. And so he gave up the idea. He just desired, and then he did not pursue that idea. And then, after a while, a little girl came to him and said, from outside of his hut, she called him and said that my mother sent some milk and rice for you. Milk, rice, and sugar candy for you. So, Rupa Goswami thought, oh, maybe Krishna, by Krishna's arrangement,
Krishna, it has come, and so he made a sweet rice. He prepared sweet rice and offered it to, after offering it to Govindaji, offered it to Sanatana Goswami. And then Sanatana Goswami, after tasting the sweet rice, it tasted so beautiful, so divine, that he began to wonder where this sweet rice actually came from. And he asked Rupa Goswami, where he got that sweet rice from. So Rupa Goswami told him that he desired to feed him some sweet rice that morning. And then after a while, a little girl came with some milk and rice and sugar candy. And with that, he made the sweet rice. So Sanatana Goswami asked, "Do you know who that girl was?" So Rupa Goswami said, "No, it must be one of these village girls, the daughter of this cowherd man. But I never really seen her before." So Sanatana Goswami said that Radharani herself came to give that milk and rice and rock candy. He said that, please don't trouble her with this kind of desire. He said, our business is to serve Srimati Radharani, not to take service from Srimati Radharani. So please don't bother Radharani with your such desires. And so a very advanced devotee never even desires anything from Krishna or Radharani. They simply want to render service to them. And I think a time will come when the senior devotees of our movement will show their mood of detachment by accepting very humble positions, not even staying in the temple. Maybe they'll have some humble arrangement outside the temple. And I think it will be better for us, because in last years the mood was a little different. The bigger devotee one is, the greater arrangements he had in the temple. But that is not actually a sign or indication of advancement. Advancement means renounce. Of course, for Prabhupada we made nice elaborate arrangements, but Prabhupada actually deserved it, and Prabhupada never demanded anything for himself. It's his devotees, it's his disciples who did it. And this, whatever is there in ISKCON is actually for Prabhupada, and no matter how wonderful arrangements we made for Prabhupada is never enough. And on top of everything, Prabhupada was not only a pure devotee of Krishna, but even apparently he was an elderly person. So these comforts and luxury and glorification did not ever even touch Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was so transcendental that all this glorification and wonderful arrangements for him were he was far removed from them. But our generation or the devotees, those who will come in the future, are not really quite capable of digesting such glorification and elaborate, comfortable arrangement. Because we may get affected by them, and we may become attached to our sense enjoyment. And if we give our senses an inch, the senses demand gradually, demand a mile. If you give your senses an inch, it will want a mile, not even a yard, but a mile. Demand will always keep on increasing. So it is better that we train ourselves to become less and less attached to our sense enjoyment. Of course, we are not very advanced, and that's why we have to be careful, because the senses are wild, and senses are very strong, very powerful. So that's why we must train ourselves to accept a life of austerities voluntarily. It should be enforced, but it should be voluntary. And we should train ourselves to become humble and demand less and less material comfort. And actually, in the early days, it was like that. I remember when I joined, those days, of course, not so much in... I joined in Mayapur. In Mayapur, it was not like that so much, but in other temples, I used to notice that, especially in America, the Mahaprasad, even in England, the Mahaprasads were offered to the new bhaktas. But gradually we set a new standard. The Mahaprasads are gifts for the sannyasis and deep devotees. And, but that should not be. Like, more advanced one is, less he should be. Less he should be attached to his senses. And yes, a new bhakta, a new devotee, it is understood that he is not so much detached from his old habits. So give him all the comforts, as much as he can offer. All the good things should be given to the new doctors. And then only we'll be able to attract many, many sincere souls. Actually, our business should be to attract the conditioned living entities and prove their ways back to Godhead. We should invite them to Krishna consciousness, and we should help them to go back to Godhead. And for ourselves, we are satisfied with whatever Krishna has given us. A devotee doesn't even desire to go back to Godhead. He feels, well, I am serving Krishna. So this is not different from going back to Godhead. I am already situated in back to Godhead, so why should I separately desire to go back to Godhead? Because this temple is not different from Vaikuntha. So I am already situated in Vaikuntha. So that's why a devotee does not desire liberation. And that's why liberation personified Mukti Devi with folded hands begs the devotees that, please engage me in your service. So devotee, that is the position of a devotee. And understanding that this temple is Krishna's and this temple is simply meant for attracting people to him. And so that is for in receiving guests. When a guest comes to the temple, we must realize that they have actually come to Krishna's house, and we must treat them so nicely that they don't feel like leaving this place. That's how it should be. We should invite the guests, or when the guests come, we should treat them so well, we should make them feel so good that they'll never feel like going back to their so-called home. So that is how we must treat the guest, and now every individual should consider himself how he should make the guest feel so good. Like I remember when I joined, I actually went to Mayapur as a visitor. I went to visit Mayapur. Although mentally I prepared myself while reading Prabhupada's books, especially Nectar of Devotion, I made up my mind. But at that time Prabhupada was not in India, Prabhupada was in America. So I thought that till Prabhupada comes back to India, I would visit the places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes. And the first place I went to was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace, Mayapur. And the devotees there treated me so nicely, and everyone was requesting me practically everyone. So why don't you stay here? So you tried so many things, so why don't you try this and see whether you like it? And this made me feel so good that the next morning I shaved up. I arrived there in the evening when the evening aarti was going on, and by the next morning after the Bhagavatam class, I just walked up to a barber and shaved myself. I got a dhoti and kurta from they had a shop in Mayapur, and shaved myself, went to the Ganges, had a bath, and became a devotee. Well, I mean, tried to become a devotee. I'm still trying. So we must treat devotees so well that whoever comes here becomes shaves up the next morning. I'm talking about the male devotees. The Matajis don't shave up. They just cover their head. And when a Vaishnava, and this is how we should receive the guest, we should understand that this temple is Krishna's house, and Krishna has actually built this house in this material nature just to attract conditioned living entities. And we are Krishna's servants, Krishna's representatives. So whenever somebody comes here, we must we must grab them so that they never leave Vaikuntha. Previously, for some reason, they left Vaikuntha, they left the spiritual sky and fallen into this material nature. But now that they have come back to the temple, we should never let them go. We should never let them go from the lotus feet of Krishna. Of course, not physically, but spiritually. We don't grab them physically and lock them up in a room. We don't do that. But by our sincere concern for them, we give them a taste of Vaikuntha. We make them feel how wonderful Vaikuntha is. And they lose all attachments, even for their house and family. And I have noticed the devotees here, especially those who are taking care of the guests, they do take care of them very nicely, like Ramananda Prabhu and Vasudev Prabhu. They're very sincerely trying to make them feel at home. And also many guests came and stayed with us for the last few days due to Janmashtami and Vyas Puja festival. So we thank them all for coming, and we also boldly announce to them also that is our ultimate intention. we want them to stay forever at Krishna's lotus feet. Any ill treatment, or if we fail to treat them well enough by any chance, then we beg them to please forgive us. And we want them to come back again and again. Because this is your real home. This temple of Krishna is your real home. And the so-called home that you have is actually a foreign place. And that's why you are never at home, at your home. Nobody is actually at home, at his home. But this is your real home, so when you come here, I'm sure many of you felt quite at home here. And I'm sure more often you come, more at home you will feel. And yesterday, after Srila Prabhupada's Vyas Puja program, I forgot to thank Gauranga Sundar Prabhu and his family, who came and really made this festival so full, so rich by the performances of Krishna conscious dances that they gave, and also their association was very much appreciated. I appreciate his sincere offering to Srila Prabhupada, and also his wife's very, very sincere offering to Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the perfection of life is to cry for the spiritual master. That is the perfection of a devotee. When the spiritual master leaves, Prabhupada says that he must shed tears. And those tears will purify the heart. And there are so many wonderful devotees that have received Srila Prabhupada's mercy, and they will keep on receiving Srila Prabhupada's mercy because of their sincerity. And I also thank all the guests that came. Some of course have left, but those of you who are here, we thank you very, very much for coming here. And please keep coming whenever you have time, and bring your friends also. People you care for, your friends and relatives, please invite them also to come to our temples on our behalf. And if there is some inability on our part to take care of you properly, please forgive us for that. And if you feel that sometimes something can be done to make the guests feel more at home, because you all are having the first-hand experience, so please don't hesitate to give your suggestions. Give the suggestions to the devotees you feel intimate with, or the temple president, or the other senior devotees. To make those give us those suggestions so that we can serve you better. Because we want it. Our business is to serve Krishna, and it is also our business to serve all the living entities who come to Krishna in the temple. Actually, every living entity is Krishna's child. So, As a servant of Krishna, it is our duty to serve every single children of Krishna. So, it is our duty to serve you all. And if we, sometimes if you feel that your servants are not really serving you well, then you tell your servants. And so the next point is how to treat the Vaishnavas when they come to the temple. So Vaishnavas are Krishna's servants, Krishna's very dear associates. So we must feel when a Vaishnava comes to the temple, we must feel that Krishna's representative has come. My Lord's representative has come. So we should be very, very respectful. And we must also feel a spontaneous attraction to the devotees. Because the devotees are our real relatives. They are Krishna's servants also. And since we are trying to become Krishna's servant, so it is our duty to serve the servants of Krishna. That's the best way to please Krishna. And the devotees, they are actually very advanced in serving Krishna. It does not really matter in what order he is in. He may be a sannyasi, he may be a grihastha, he may be a vanaprastha or a brahmachari. It doesn't really matter in what order he is. These orders are actually external. The real thing is Krishna's servitorship. The real identity is that they all are Krishna's servants. They all are Vaishnavas. So that's why we must be very, very careful, very attentive to please them. And when they come, we must treat them so well that Krishna immediately becomes pleased. This is the easiest way to please Krishna. Krishna is actually sitting in the hearts of the Vaishnavas. Tomaru Hridaye Sada Govinda Vishram. Govinda Kahaye Mamo Vaishnava Paran. In your heart, Govinda resides. Govinda always resides in your heart. It's a prayer to the Vaishnavas. And Govinda Kahaye Mamo Vaishnava Paran. And Krishna says, Govinda says, that Vaishnavas are my heart and soul. So Krishna is sitting in the heart of the Vaishnavas and Krishna is announcing that Vaishnavas are my heart and soul. So if we please the Vaishnavas, then Krishna immediately will become pleased. So that's the easiest way to please Krishna. Prabhupada gave an example regarding that when you try to please a very rich man, it is very difficult. A person who is very rich, he has so much that no matter whatever you give, doesn't really bear any significance to him. So it is very difficult to please a rich man. But it is very easy to please that rich man's little son. You can just give him a bar of chocolate and the son will be happy. And seeing that the son is happy, the father will automatically become happy. So it is very difficult to please Krishna. It's actually impossible to please Krishna. But when you please Krishna's dear son, the Vaishnava, then Krishna immediately becomes pleased. And it is very easy to please the Vaishnavas. Another name for Vaishnava is, another quality of a Vaishnava is Ashutosh. That is also the name of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is a very elevated Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam Jathasandhu. And Lord Shiva is very easily pleased. There is a story that one hunter was hunting from a bale tree, and he saw, and under this tree, Lord Shiva was meditating. That he could see, because Lord Shiva was not visible to his gross material vision. Lord Shiva was meditating under the tree, and this hunter was hunting from the tree. He climbed up the tree and he was hunting, and he shoot an arrow to some animal. And that while he shoot the arrow, one bale leaf got caught by the arrow and fell on the head of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva immediately became very pleased. And he said, who offered me this bale leaf? Who offered me this leaf? So he asked, whoever offered me the leaf, you ask for any benediction. Tell me what benediction you want. I'll grant you that boon. So that is how Vaishnava is. He is very, very pleased. Even if unknowingly somebody does something to him, renders some favorable service or action to him, he becomes pleased. And when he becomes pleased, when his heart is pleased, then Krishna, who is sitting in his heart, becomes immediately very pleased. So we must feel all the Vaishnavas who come to the temple as a very wanted guest. They are not only guests, they are actually the masters. We are the servants and they are the masters. And when they come, we should make them feel as if it is their place, and we must try to render as much service as we can. I don't want to go into details of how we should serve the Vaishnavas. That also I leave up to the devotees. There are some Vedic customs. I don't know whether it will be practical for following in the West, but still maybe we can discuss about them a little bit. Generally, in India, when a guest comes, a Vaishnava guest comes, his feet are washed first. Not in the temple. Not in the temple, but as he comes to the temple, like preferably it is done outside the before he enters into the temple. Because the understanding is that in India people walk barefoot, or saintly people in those days used to walk barefoot. And so naturally their feet used to get dirty, and as we discussed previously, that before one enters into the temple, one must wash his feet. So instead of he himself washing the feet, the devotees of the temple used to wash his feet as a gesture of welcome or expressing honor to him. And we must also be careful not to use panchamrita in washing. The two mistakes we made in the past, one is we washed the feet of devotees in front of Radha Krishna and Govindai. That was not proper. Prabhupada's feet could have been washed, because Prabhupada's position is actually very, very elevated. We do not really know who Prabhupada is, but only we can realize that Prabhupada's position is very, very elevated. We cannot even, in our remotest dream, we cannot understand who Prabhupada was. Only when our spiritual vision is open, when we develop our spiritual vision, then only we'll be able to recognize who Prabhupada actually is. So if Prabhupada accepts, Prabhupada allowed his disciples to wash his feet in front of Radha Krishna, that is one thing that shouldn't be imitated. And another thing is that we should not wash feet with milk or milk products, because milk is very, very auspicious, and such an auspicious thing should not be touched with our feet. Even food grains are not supposed to be touched with our feet, because food grains are Lakshmi. So the grains are Lakshmi, so touching grains with feet means keeping Lakshmi Devi. So milk is also a very, very auspicious element, a milk product. So we should not wash feet with milk or milk products. We should wash feet with water, and we can sprinkle some, we can put some, maybe some flower petals also in that water, that we can do. And then whenever some guest or some devotee comes to the temple, we must ask them whether they took prasad. That is a thing that we must do as soon as the devotee comes to the temple. Because after a long journey, when somebody comes, it's most likely he will be hungry. So if you are really concerned about him, or if we are really concerned about him, then we must ask him. Please come take some prasad. And Prabhupada also said about guests, like whenever a guest comes to a temple, they should immediately be given some prasadam. And Prabhupada said in India, we should always have the prasadam ready for 20 people. Not in India. Prabhupada said that in America. I think Prabhupada gave that instruction in Boston. He said that always there should be prasadam for 20 people. And what prasadam? Nice sabji, puri, and halwas. And as soon as this is finished, then immediately prasadam should be made for another 20 people. For 20 people more. And if something is left over, then the devotees can eat it. So there is no loss. So that means we have prasadam ready for guests whenever they come. And I think in India it should be even more. Like in the West there may be for 20 people, but in India, especially in big temples, there should be prasadam ready for maybe 50 people, because more guests come to India. So this is how Prabhupada cared for the guests. And what to talk about the devotees. Prabhupada, early days, when Prabhupada was preaching in New York, he opened this temple in 26th Second Avenue. Prabhupada had one big jar, and that was full with, that was always kept full with gulab jamun. And it was kept on the ground floor. Like whenever devotees wanted, they could just pop in one or two gulab jamuns in the box. And these gulab jamuns were called the ISKCON bullets. And the saying was that a bullet a day keeps Maya away. So Prabhupada used to make those gulabs himself. He used to make those gulab jamuns, and he would keep the thing, you know, keep a jar full of gulabs for the devotees. So actually that's how we should act also towards the devotee. The Prabhupada set an example. Prabhupada tried his level best to make everyone happy. So happy that they would never think of leaving Krishna consciousness. And that's why so many thousands of people became attracted to Prabhupada. When Prabhupada started the movement, what did Prabhupada have? Prabhupada had no money. Prabhupada had nothing material. The only thing Prabhupada had is the unlimited Krishna consciousness, knowledge of Krishna, and a heart so big that that could accommodate the whole universe. So whoever came in contact with Prabhupada immediately became drawn towards Prabhupada because of his magnetic personality. And that magnetic personality doesn't come from some external charisma. It comes from the genuine concern. It comes from a real broad heart. So devotee means a big heart. Mahaprabhu also said that to Amogha, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, who was very offensive to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And one day he was blaspheming Mahaprabhu when Mahaprabhu was invited in the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to take prasad. He said, "What kind of sannyasi he is? He is eating so much." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya made a big, huge plate for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he wanted to offer everything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Amogha was so envious that he began to criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That look at that sannyasi, he is eating so much. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became so angry that he picked up a stick and he chased Amogha. And he cursed him. He said, "Let my daughter become a widow. Let my daughter become a widow. That is, let him die and my daughter become a widow. But I do not want to have anything to do with this man." And then because of this offense, Amogha got cholera. Cholera is a very dangerous, very deadly disease in India. There's no cure for cholera actually. Within a few hours, people die. And then Mahaprabhu went to him and blessed him. And Mahaprabhu told him that you are a Brahmin, Amogha, and a Brahmin's heart is naturally pure, naturally clean. Ottanto nirmal ei Brahman ridai. The heart of a Brahmin is naturally very clean and very broad. And this is a natural place for Krishna's for Krishna to reside. The heart of a Brahmin is so clean, so pure, and so beautiful that Krishna always resides there. But why you allowed the chandal-like envy to enter into your heart? Maksho je chandale kano iha bashaile. Your heart should have actually been the place for Krishna. But why did you allow this matsarya, envy, chandal? Chandal is a very cruel, very degraded person. Chandal are the people, those who burn the dead bodies. So this kind of job is meant, actually this is not a job for any decent person. It's a very, very low class, very, very heartless job to burn the bodies of the dead. So their hearts automatically become very hard.
So Mahaprabhu is saying that why did you allow the chandal-like envy to enter in your heart? So we also have to try to develop our consciousness in such a way that our heart becomes broader and broader. As Krishna conscious we become, our hearts become broader and broader. So devotee means broad-hearted. There is no narrowness in Krishna consciousness. Whenever there is narrow-mindedness, we must understand that the envy has entered there, or false ego is acting. Envy is the catalyst to our false ego. False ego immediately becomes very, very prominent. So we should not allow these six vices to enter into your heart. Six enemies, rather. Kaam, krodh, lobh, moho, mod, and matsarya. Lust, greed, anger, bewilderment, mod, pride, and envy. We should never let them enter into our heart. So then only we will become Vaishnavas, and then only we will be able to receive Krishna's mercy. Hare Krishna, thank you all very much.